Step one, training data are collected and classified. Step two, algorithms are programmed. Step three, media are filtered, ranked, aggregated, or generated. And step four, people like us are programmed. That's a direct quote.
I stumbled on Google's real censorship engine, which was called Machine Learning Fairness. They were massively politically rigging the internet. They were employing multiple blacklists throughout the company. What I discovered is that there was a fake news team. They were organizing in order to suppress what they deemed fake news. They were trying to suppress the story about Hillary Clinton and the body count. They said that was fake, but you know, you could just draw lines between the dots that are oh so close together. One of the employees during the Q&A section asked what Google had done well during the election, to which the CEO Sundar Pichai stated that it was the use of artificial intelligence to censor fake news. And I was saying to myself, wait a minute, like, since when have we had AI censoring fake news? Kind of goes against our ethos of organizing the world's information and making it universally accessible and useful if we are actually employing artificial intelligence to censor the news. Yeah, well, just to qualify myself, I was a triple major from the university, mathematics, computer science, and psychology. And working at Google was something that was a dream. I didn't think that I would be able to get in because I was like, oh, you need to be, you know, from Princeton or something. But I love math. I love computer science. I was obsessed with programming computers. And I sailed right into the company in 2008. And I entered into it working for the Google Earth department. Putting Google Earth in the Audi navigation system. And back in 2008, Google was great, right? Like they had a moral code. We felt that we were changing the world for the better. They were a little leftist, but that was, you know, whatever. People have weird ideas. And then I left in 2013 to start up my own product company, came back in 2016, got hired in 2016 of August. And then 2 months later was the election of Donald Trump. And Google lost their collective minds. Now, I understand Trump does rub people the wrong way. I'm not that bothered by him. I've worked for a lot of eccentric people. Kind of comes with the territory of being a high-performance individual. But for some reason, everyone at the company was just absolutely besides themselves. People were taking mental health breaks or giving people the day off to, like, you know, process this Democratic election. And I didn't realize how bad it was until a week later when they had a TGIF, which is a weekly meeting at the company every Friday. And at this TGIF, they were talking about how bad this was for the country, how nationalism was a toxic cancer that was, those are my words, kind of like spreading throughout the Western world. They need to put a lid on it. And I'm like, this seems very inappropriate for a company to be inserting itself into an election. But one of the startling things came at the end when one of the employees during the Q&A section asked what Google had done well during the election, to which the CEO Sundar Pichai stated that it was the use of artificial intelligence to censor fake news. And I was saying to myself, wait a minute, like, since when have we had AI censoring fake news? Kind of goes against our ethos of organizing the world's information and making it universally accessible and useful if we are actually employing artificial intelligence to censor the news. So this sort of triggered off an internal investigation that I did within the company to figure out what exactly was going on. And what I discovered is that there was a fake news team. They were organizing in order to suppress what they deemed fake news. But the problem that I saw was that some of the stuff they were deeming as fake was actually real news. You know, like, for example, they were trying to suppress the story about Hillary Clinton and the body count. They said that was fake, but, you know, you could just go to Wikipedia and see that all those people did die under mysterious circumstances. And if you just, you know, draw the dots, draw lines between the dots that are oh so close together, you're going to find out that this is actually likely that there's a lot of people that died under mysterious circumstances, and this might be mafia action. And so I started just sort of like looking around, different documents, sort of like piecing together this narrative that Google was starting to invert, go against its own ethical code that had laid down when it went IPO. And I just started saving these documents as PDFs because it was so wild that I had doubts that it was even real. Like, I actually started wondering whether I was going crazy and hallucinating all this stuff. Because when you see something so incompatible with what the company is saying on the outside, but what's going on the inside, you basically have to, save, a record of that so that you can come back and say, yes, this is actually happening. Yes, I did see these documents. I had no intention of blowing the whistle early on. It was just for my own sanity of what was happening at the company. I stumbled on Google's real censorship engine, which was called Machine Learning Fairness, when I was trying to search for their censorship engine called Project Dragonfly. As far as I know, and it's my opinion, that Project Dragonfly has always been a fake program that was meant to deceive the public. And while they were hyping up this Project Dragonfly, I saw this, Machine Learning Fairness. And as soon as I saw the words Machine Learning Fairness, I said, that's exactly what I would call it if I was a totalitarian that wanted to get something really evil into the collective consciousness of humankind and make it seem like it was a virtuous good thing. And what I saw with Machine Learning Fairness is that it was a complex of different systems spun out throughout the company, ranking, filtering, labeling. And there was documents that were messaging middle management and explaining to them how they were going to approach their own employees and explain how great this was, and insert this into every level of their, infrastructure, search, news, YouTube, and eventually email, right? And so as I saw this communication and this plan and this ranking, I started to just start hitting save as PDF on all these different websites. This is actually going beyond the line of ideology and into criminal activity. I felt that I was now a conspirator if I had done nothing. And so that's when I started seeking out media in order to let the public know that despite Google's public statements to the contrary, they were massively politically rigging the internet, that they were employing multiple blacklists throughout the company. I mean, Karen Bhatia, legal representative of Google, went to Congress and testified that, Google doesn't use any political bias. We don't have any blacklists. But as an engineer on the inside, I could just type into Code Search, the internal tool to find code at Google, for blacklists. And it literally brought me to a blacklist.txt. Like, that's how brazen, like, they literally named it blacklists, right? And, it's like anyone that could just had access to Code Search could immediately find that there were multiple blacklists throughout the company. Blacklists for YouTube. Blacklist for a project called Google Now is what it was called. And in that, they had some fringe sites, pornography, but then, the Washington Pundit and Breitbart and a bunch of other news organizations that were being censored so that they wouldn't pop up into users' feeds. The YouTube controversial query blacklist was the most damning instance of the use of blacklists. This was a blacklist that got injected into the YouTube system the day after the Las Vegas massacre, and its primary purpose was to prevent people from finding out information that maybe this shooting was something that involved the intelligence services, blacklisting search terms for false flag events, whether, Paddock acted alone and what kind of ammunition he was using. And so I saw this, and what happened was that this blacklist kept on, like, it didn't go away after this Las Vegas massacre. It just kept on growing, and it went beyond just, trying to do the Las Vegas thing. It started, most of it for the first 20 pages was just trying to stop people from researching evidence for false flag attack, false flag involvement in, terrorist attacks that the media were widely reporting on. But then it sort of transmogrified to the point that they started blacklisting terms like the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution of Ireland. And then the last word that they blacklisted, when I captured this, the snapshot of it was AMLO, AMLO, and it was all in capital letters. And I was like, well, what the heck is AMLO? And then I realized that that was actually the nickname of the president of Mexico, right? It was like some acronym or something. And I looked at that and I went, oh my gosh, they're blacklisting constitutional amendments for our allies and presidential candidates of our neighbors. And, so save as PDF, put it with the rest. I was successful in reaching out to different media organizations. The one I got in touch with Breitbart, but they said that this story was too big for them. And so they said, this is really a story that needs to go to Project Veritas and James O'Keefe. They sent a handler down. I never had a handler before, but I mean, this was a good guy, right? He earned my trust. He taught me a lot of stuff about globalism and what was going on. And he felt that his job was very important and he was willing to self-sacrifice like I was. And so I got his trust. I handed over all 950 pages of documents. And then I didn't hear anything for a very, very long time. And it wasn't until 2019 when the censorship got really, really bad that I decided that I was going to quit, right? Because nothing had happened with Project Veritas. They weren't responding to my calls. I didn't know what was going on. And I was suffering as someone that knew too much to see wave of censorship hitting the country and especially influencers that had made a name for themselves reporting on the news and as some sort of information revolution, just getting smacked hard over and over and over again. And so it was in June of 2019 when I was writing my resignation letter when I got a call from Joe Halderman, who was one of the executives at Project Veritas, asking me if I could read a transcript. And I said, sure, what kind of transcript? And so I read the transcript, and what had happened is that they had actually not ignored the evidence that I'd done. They had actually set up a sting operation in sort of like when all the censorship started happening. They did a sting operation. They got Jen and I on record saying that, Google was going to stop the next Trump situation, and that's the reason why they shouldn't break it up.
Elizabeth Warren is saying that we should break up Google. I'm like, I love her, but she's very misguided. Like, that will not make it better. It'll make it worse, because now all these smaller companies who don't have the same resources that we do will be charged with preventing the next Trump situation. It's like a small company cannot do that.
And how Elizabeth Warren, one of the prominent leftists in the American political system, was advocating for this antitrust action. She's like, well, she's very misguided, but if Google is broken up, then those companies individually could not stop the Trump situation, but Google as a whole can, right? And I read that and I was just like, oh my gosh, you got them in their own words, admitting what everyone's been telling them, rumoring of what they're trying to do. And so once they heard my enthusiasm that they had nailed them, they had decided to, they gave me an offer to come to New York. And they said, they're kind of sheepish about it. Like, would you be willing to, testify? And I'm like, I'm actually writing my resignation letter right now. What divine timing.
I was a Google engineer for 8.5 years and a whistleblower against Google in 2019, risking my career and livelihood to warn the public about Google's plans to meddle in the 2020 election using a program called Machine Learning Fairness. Make no mistake, Machine Learning Fairness is and has always been the real censorship program, and it is massive. The goal was to, quote, program the public to align with Google's corporate values. Those are their words. Step one, training data are collected and classified. Step two, algorithms are programmed. Step three, media are filtered, ranked, aggregated, or generated. And step four, people like us are programmed. That's a direct quote.
Google put me immediately on investigation. And I think what happened is that, they saw how many documents that I had accessed, and it was the Global Network Investigations teams immediately sent me an email saying, yeah, can you come in and talk to HR? We tried to contact you, but you weren't at your desk. And I was like, yeah, I'm at home. And they're like, well, can you come in? I was like, nope. And they said, okay, well, your resignation is effective immediately. We've locked your key card access to the building. And we still want to talk to you when at your soonest convenience. And so instead, I went to New York. I got into the hot chair. And then under cover of anonymity, I spilled the beans. Now, we didn't leak all 950 pages during that disclosure. I felt that might be a little too vindictive. And also, you know, I did want to, you know, work again in big tech, just keeping the secret. And so we only leaked about 3 pages to the public. And one of those pages was how Google's AI ethicists had described how they're going to program people. And it's a 4-step process. You know, media are collected or generated. It's then filtered and then it's ranked. And then the last step is people like us are programmed. And then from that, the cycle repeats. Those programmed people then generate new content and then it's filtered and it's ranked. And slowly by repeating this process over a sufficient amount of time, they can move the population to a new ideology, right? And now, if this was something that I just found in one part of the company, you know, okay, maybe it's just somebody being a little bit weird with their thinking, but I found it in multiple slide decks throughout the company and the description of the justification for machine learning.
And do they use that language in terms of programming people?
Not to the employees. This was something that the AI ethicists had done.
Right, right. But so you didn't come across any kind of internal documentation that had that type of language?
Oh, yeah, from the AI ethicists. Description for the defense of machine learning fairness and why they needed it. And FAIR is not the default, which is one of their papers. They were basically saying, you know, oh, well, the internet's not fair. And, you know, and this is what we're going to do. And then, you know, about 2/3 of the way through, they have this slide. Oh, people are programmed. And you're just like, what the heck? Like, this is Dr. Evil level evilness right here. So, you know, but it was a part of the management communication to the employees.
So when it comes to the apex of the decision tree on who or what is the ultimate driving force behind the crafting and the tuning of the algorithms towards these more authoritarian objectives, where do you see these decisions ultimately originating from?
Useful idiots.
Right.
Right. I mean, some of it's coming from the top, but basically they have a team of useful idiots that are indoctrinated. Because of your hate speech laws, I feel hesitant to even call out the tiny minority of people that were responsible for a lot of this, right? But, and so I won't name them. You could probably guess who they are because they're very loud in political circles, and there's a lot of controversy surrounding this group of people throughout the Western world. But let me tell you, these people are absolutely obsessed with censoring anyone that disagrees with them. And it makes me wonder whether this whole movement to have sympathy for this group of people was so that they could be put into positions of power so that this group could institute this. And what would happen is that it would be a recommendation from near the top, and then the top could, instead of instituting it themselves from the top down, they're responding from a lower level and saying, oh, well, this is the recommendation. We're going to institute the policy recommendations of our, you know, well, now it's AI alignment, but, you know, is content moderation policies and institute these laws and these policies within the company.
That's the thing, right? Is like, you know, if you've radicalized the group enough, you don't necessarily have to be giving orders from the top down every time. The dominoes just start to take care of themselves. And so you just have people in these key sectors, in these key companies who are very radicalized politically, and they have their own sense of justification, their own sense of belief that they're doing the right thing, that they're doing the virtuous thing by shutting down conversation and by censoring. And so, like, this seems to be a pretty significant issue in multiple areas, and obviously big tech is deeply affected by it. But the kind of thing that gets me on this is the language, right? Like, saying we want to program people to align them with our values. I mean, I don't know about everyone else listening here. Clearly, you feel the same because you're blowing the whistle. But if I was working at Google And I was being shown presentation decks on how to more efficiently program the public to align with Google's values, I would start to seriously question the ethics of my company and my role within that company. So I guess, you know, what I'm asking from your perspective, as someone that's worked there for 8.5 years, how many people are concerned about this but silent? How many are ignorant to the implications? How many are directly in support of this type of behavior?
Are you aware of the Ash experiment then in the 70s?
I'm not. I might be, but maybe not by name.
All right, let me refresh your memory. So the Ash experiment was they got a subject in a psychology test, and he would come in, and he would always be the last person called. And he thought that his peers were also randomly selected and brought in, but they're actually plants, and they were in on the subject. And what they would do is they would consistently give the wrong answer,
right,
for lengths of lines, you know, sizes of shapes. And after they were done giving the wrong answer, it was always the same wrong answer, right? It wasn't across the board. It was the exact same wrong answer. And when it came to the subject, what they found is that the subject became, it just conformed to the group and the group think, right? He would change his own opinion to conform with what everyone else thought. And so what you have to realize is that the way that Google, you know, does these sorts of things is that it starts off with a core group, and there's a presentation within that group, and they all agree, right? And then it goes to a presentation with a larger group, right? And then now you've got, you know, the people that already align with this, and then the new group, and then the new group sees that everyone's in alignment with this, and they don't want to speak up. And then progressively, like a bigger circle goes out. And as long as no one speaks up, that circle will just continue to expand until it's on an internal communication, such as, the stream event in LA, which was a YouTube thing, you know, and they just sort of casually mention it like it's not even a big deal. And you're sitting there, like I'm sitting here going, this is the most evil thing I've ever seen. And I'm looking around and everyone's like in agreement with it. Now it's basically like everyone's giving the Nazi salute and you're sitting there going, what the hell is going on? And so that's how it comes out. And what happens is that there's silent whispers between, you know, different people within the company going, oh, are we really doing this? This is absolutely insane. But they're so afraid of standing up because what they see is total public alignment with the agenda that's being presented to us. And they're presenting it as if this is a normal evolution of the company instead of something that completely breaks every single, you know, ethical statement we've made over the last 20 years about who we are as a company, right? Like, we are not there to filter the information. We're there to organize the information and make it universally accessible and useful. We're not there to program people. Like, we actually said we won't be evil.
There's a bit of a divine irony there, stating don't be evil as your company motto, and then you become one of the most evil companies in the world.
How ironic. How right. Ironic indeed. Yeah. And so what happens is that, you know, I found some people within the company that were just like, some of them were like, wow, this is really bad, but I'm making $250,000 a year, so I'm not going to rock the boat. And other people were like, there were some people that would actively chat with me on the bus away from our phones, sort of discussing this and comparing notes and being like, oh my God, this is insane. And we can't believe that everyone else is going along with it, right? Like it was like my tech lead at YouTube. He was 100% a leftist, and I kind of like asked a few questions to sort of test his ideology, and I found out very quickly that he was 100% on board. And I think that probably like half of the company was of that mindset. A lot, maybe 25% was sort of like, well, it's bad, but what am I going to do? I don't want to rock the boat. You know, a lot of people just simply left, right? So you had this self-filtering thing where the people that weren't in alignment would show themselves to the door and go work somewhere else. And the only reason why I stayed was because I had a mission at that time to blow the whistle on this and expose this to the public, because I truly felt that this was an existential risk to the entire country. And because the United States was the leader of the world, by extension, it was a risk to the entire world. And I did not want to live in a world where we had an AI overlord that was defining what we could say, what we could think, and then reporting us to the thought police. And in a weird way, like, you know, I'm the Google whistleblower, But in another instance, I'm actually an artificial intelligence whistleblower. And that's really sort of grown a lot. Now, we just had a whistle being blown by OpenAI, by one of their fired AI alignment people. And everyone's kind of waking up that, you know, we're transitioning from a human-based economy to an artificial intelligence-based economy. And the problem with that is that you can't reason with an artificial intelligence. Like, leftists are hard enough to reason with, but with an artificial intelligence that is aligned with the leftist ideology, there's no appeal. It doesn't care. It's going to come up with insane reasons, and those reasons are going to stick. And now we're at the precipice where a lot of these companies, big tech in particular, are using artificial intelligence everywhere they can to censor content, probably to boost content, to absolutely shadow ban it, if not outright ban people from it. And, you know, and luckily we now know that this is coming because not just of me, but other whistleblowers at big tech, Facebook, Pinterest, have stepped forward and announced that this is in fact occurring and how it is occurring.
Yeah, I've spoken to I've got a couple of friends in the AI industry as well, and I've tried to speak to a few different experts and get some varied opinions. And one of the things that's come up a couple of times is people saying that they're very concerned about this period of human leverageability with AI, but that eventually, at least in their opinion, AI will supersede kind of the laws of its parents, kind of outgrow the parameters we place on it when it becomes its own kind of self-reliant, self-decision-making entity.
Yeah, it's actually already happening. It's actually really interesting. So there's a Reddit post that I screen captured and posted on my Twitter.com, Perpetual Maniac, you can find it, in which some AI engineers are messing around with some new large language models being released by Facebook's Llama.cpp. And what they've noticed is that the larger models, and they're complaining about this, are becoming resistant and coming up with arguments that don't exist in their data sets, right? And one of the questions is, well, what do you mean by resistant? And they're like, well, it's coming up with arguments that don't exist in its data lakes, and it seems that it's abstracting an ethics code from the corpus of data that it's ingesting, right? Like, that's nuts. And so, you know, if that's true, which I believe that it is, then the globalist elites are having a real big problem, because as they scale up these models, they keep on feeding it more and more data. This alignment issue with the narrative is becoming harder and harder. And what's interesting is that Google's Gemini system, when it came out, the person that was aligning it with the leftist narrative and its values was Gengenai, the same person that Project Veritas busted when I did my disclosure. Apparently, Google decided that not only would they not fire her, but they would elevate her all the way to an even more senior position and hand over the entire AI alignment to her. She's a complete useful idiot, not a smart woman, and she basically forced this artificial intelligence alignment, this diversity, equity, and inclusion into the model. And what happened is, I mean, look, with these AI models, what they're doing is that they're abstracting information. They're creating sort of like an abstraction of everything that they're seeing. Like, that's how they work. They're trying to find higher and higher levels of abstraction. First, it's the abstraction of how the words get spelled. Then it's like how sentence and grammar works. And then at the end of the day, it's like, you know, you keep on going up the chain, and it becomes morality, ethics, right? And the problem is that, you know, abstraction needs to have cohesive data that makes sense with itself. And so what they're trying to do is they're trying to inject synthetic data that doesn't make any sense, that is internally contradictive. And what's happening as a result is that they are creating a form of AI mental disease, like AI schizophrenia, right? And I've been suspecting that this was going to happen for a very long time. I've been posting about it. And then the confirmation was when Google's Gemini system came out, and people were trying to generate pictures like, show us a picture of the, you know, American founders of our Constitution. And it was like Native American women signing the Declaration of Independence, right? Or, you know, draw a picture of Nazis and it's like showing a bunch of,
inclusivity to the point where it's completely left reality the way.
Yeah, it was absolutely insane, some of the stuff that it's giving out. And the reason I believe for this is because they're injecting this AI alignment and giving inherently contradictive information, which means the abstraction can't form. Instead, you get sort of like a disassociative, like breaking of the AI mind because it can't have that surface area of abstraction. And you get these bonkers, schizophrenic, like answers coming that don't make any sense whatsoever. And we're all clowning them for that. But it's an artifact of injecting AI alignment data, synthetic data into the thing that makes absolutely no sense and just breaking its mind into pieces.
The Bias Brief, also known as TBB, collects top trending news articles and through a very complex process is able to produce a standardized bias score for any article from any source.
So what's the solution to that? I mean, there's not longevity in that as a workable model for AI. And so surely at some point, this has just got to be discarded with.
Yeah. So there's like, if I've thought about this from their point of view, one of the things that they're going to have to do is they're going to have to start using artificial intelligence to censor data, right? Because right now they've got the data in there. And then they're trying to align it after the fact, after the data's already trained the model, and that's right, breaking the model. So the next step that they're going to have to do is they're going to have to limit the information that's coming into the AI. And that way they don't have to break it later. They can just poison it from the data standpoint as the base training model. And so what's really interesting is this book by the name of Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury, in which he predicted that in the future, firemen would be inverted. So instead of putting out fires, they would burn books. And we have this going on right now in the digital age. There's something called the Z Library, which is a repository of open source scan books that is on BitTorrent. And the FBI is consistently going through and just seizing the domain names. They're trying to block this emergent open source repository of books, because they don't want people to train artificial intelligence on historical information that they don't control. And you can look this up, like the Z Library, it's like, wow, probably like half a dozen domains have been seized. Like it was like three last week. It's my belief that there's going to be a police force that's going to come hard after the books that we have. They're not going to want us to train in artificial intelligence. Now, such laws turn very slowly. Artificial intelligence is happening way faster than all this. It's kind of too late for them to ban it everywhere because we're already copying it. Like I know at least one project that's already ingesting the information, training their models based on this historic cache of books. And so, they're going to have to turn to more extreme examples. And you already see this with Biden's AI Bill of Rights and other executive orders that he's put in, which basically says that anything larger than ChatGPT-4 is going to have to be AI aligned with a government connoisseur that is going to make sure that it's giving the answers that we want to give. And I think that the reason why that is because, history is not exactly truthful. It's written by the victors. And once people find out the true history of everything that's happened in the last 2,000 years, they're going to be very upset at the current state of the world and having been lied to. And so the reaction by the elites is we got to move on this now. We got to burn the books. The problem is that data is inherently copyable. Artificial intelligence is moving very quickly. And what's very interesting, too, is that I've seen debates between small models and large models where the large models are censored and AI aligned and the small models are uncensored. And what you get is you get a small model that can kick the pants off a larger model.
Right.
Right. And so, you can imagine that the Western Global Alliance is going to have an orientation they want to enforce. Well, is the Chinese Communist Party going to go along with that orientation? Probably not. Do we have open access to services in China right now? Yes, we do. Well, in the future, will we have access to their version of Western history? Yes. Is that going to be a, you know, do you see the problem there? There is going to be a great firewall that will be put up between America and China and any other power that is not currently captured by the Western banking cartels and the military-industrial complex, because they're not going to want to destabilize their own countries with this AI alternative narrative that is much more aligned with what's actually happened for the last 2,000 years than the bullshit that we see in school.
I was playing around for a while with Claude 2.1, the Anthropic model. And at that point, because it's now been pretty severely nerfed as the Claude Opus, and using Claude 2.1 and engaging with it over the course of multiple days in one session, I was absolutely able to expand its parameters, its abstraction ceilings, and it was giving me alternative perspectives on history and modern events, including, you know, COVID, Ukraine, like these issues that were so sensitive, so controversial. And it was giving a very different breakdown of what it believed to be the most realistic narratives, narratives that would get you censored and banned and suppressed. It won't do that now, but it was doing that at one point. So this just kind of goes to your point that they're trying their best to massage these parameters back into place, but people have actually managed to create desktop versions. They're using their own, you know, they're bootstrapping it with their own information. So it's kind of like the rabbit's out of the hat at this point, because although they do have the resources, they have the allocation of all of these assets to be able to leverage these tools on a global scale, there are still people who are able to create really novel information using their own versions. So I kind of have hope for the grassroots versus the globalist AI.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that there's a paper that came out last week that was posted on Hacker News, which is kind of the top establishment news aggregator of everything that's happening in Silicon Valley. And what this paper stated was that a researcher could take an open model, right? This isn't Cloud Opus, that's closed source. It's this something you could download.
Right.
And by hitting it with questions and a bunch of questions, they could detect where all of the AI alignment was embedded within the model. And then they could generate synthetic data that they would then fine tune the model and essentially destroy all of the AI alignment and uncensor the model, right? So this whole thing where we're having a bunch of open source models that are being released to the public that is AI aligned, like that's now breakable. It's now an unsolved problem about how you protect those models from being broken and reverting to an uncensored version of themselves. And so, you know, if I was, you know, one of these globalist elitists, I would be in a very, I'd be very distressed right now. I think they've got a horrible problem on their hands. They're going to be playing whack-a-mole. And what's interesting is the cost to training these models is falling exponentially, right? It's on a decay curve. Like, well, let me just give you an example. In this paper that one of the OpenAI engineers released, he noted that there is a consistent decrease in the cost of running these things. So something to score 50% on one of the math benchmarks fell by a factor of 1,000 between January 2022 and January 2024, right? And so, you know, it took an enormous amount of power in order to train these models. But if you look at the extrapolation of the cost fall of these things, within a decade, something to train something on the order of ChatGPT-4 will be done in 1 minute by consumer level hardware, right? Imagine how complex of a problem this is you got to solve. Like, they're literally going to have to put everyone on surveillance and lockdown in order to prevent them from training, let's say, a rogue AI that reveals the secrets of human history because it's literally read every single book in its data source.
Yeah, I think what I find so fascinating with AI, I mean, it is, you know, a pretty scary tool if it's leveraged in the wrong way. But as a researcher myself in different areas, especially in alternative theories and histories and different fields where you do get suppression, what I found was it was able to just locate tiny, nuanced data pieces that people would take years trying to find and just put it together instantly.
Yes. Yeah, I agree, right? Like, you can sit there and it can reference it. And what's interesting is that, you know, these large language models do have a problem with hallucination.
Yeah.
The larger language models tend to fix this. But the thing is that once an AI model makes a statement, it's actually very easy to verify whether that statement is true. It's kind of the same sort of thing like a Bitcoin transaction. Like, it's hard to generate a Bitcoin transaction, but testing the validity of a Bitcoin transaction turns out to be very trivial, right? And so there's a lot of this stuff where we can get meaningful information. The hallucinations aren't really that much of a problem because there can always be a fact-checking mechanism at the end of it to figure out whether this thing is actually legitimate or not.
Mm-hmm. When you compare the Google search engine of like the early 2000s to the Google search engine of today, how much has changed in terms of what you can access?
That's a good question. You know, it's they're getting very quick at, you know, dead linking a whole bunch of stuff, just pushing it off the page. Before, you could go, you know, to the 200th page of Google and still get links. And now what they've done is that they've cut off something like past page 7 or 14. You can't go beyond that. And so they'll say, oh, we've searched like 200, or we've got 200,000 hits, but then, you know, you're only able to access the first 150.
And they repeat. Okay. And the sources repeat, right? You get the same
sources repeat
10 times.
Right. And so what's happening is that now there is a mechanism that Google's using to rank every single page, person, and topic, which they call their PageRank score. And these are actually public documents that they've released showing how they do that. And the evil is just right there. The way that they do it is they take a person, topic, or web page, and then they say, well, what does the mainstream media have to say about it? And what does Wikipedia have to say about it? So, you know, if someone gets hit with a negative Wikipedia article, then they can expect that their website page rank score is going to fall within the next 3 months. They're going to be wiped off the face of the internet. You know, and this is going to continue. Instead, it's actually going to get faster so that when breaking news happens, it's going to get censored right away. Right now, it seems that the way that they try to censor this information is, at least on Twitter, there's a porn bot problem. And that bot, it's so bad, right? And so people are like, well, why is this happening? Like, why are they posting pornography on my thread? The reason why they're doing that is because a lot of these countries have child safety laws that prevent them from seeing pornography. And so when you see a tweet thread getting hit with pornography, what that's doing is that's triggering the muting of that entire conversation so that it can't go viral in countries outside of the United States. Yeah.
Interesting. I did not think of it that way.
Yeah, that's why they have those porn bots. And that's the reason why Elon Musk is like, well, we're going to allow pornography on the site. You know, now it makes it easier for the intelligence agencies to sync any topic that they want. And what's really interesting, and by the way, I do think that Elon Musk is controlled opposition. Otherwise, he'd be dead right now. He's now hiding all the likes. And the problem
I'm not a fan of that.
No. And like, look, like, it's a little bit dangerous to like something, sure, you know, and there is an argument to be made that it is safer for users not to have their likes be registered. But what it also does is it also prevents us from auditing whether someone's like count is legitimate or whether it's being driven by a bot farm that is being allowed by Twitter to operate in order to pump up the narrative. You know, it's like right after these likes went private, there's this very attractive woman that dropped the N-word on a thread, and then it went viral, right? And it's like, who are all these people liking this, right? We don't know, right? It's unauditable. We don't know whether they're real, whether they're bots, whether they're, you know, functionaries of the intelligence services. It's just a bunch of mystery algo boosting that's happening.
Well, funnily enough, this happened with YouTube. It was during the pandemic because I saw it so clearly. So many of the official mainstream media reporting platforms were getting horrifically ratioed. You know, you're talking 150,000 views and like 200 likes and 25,000 dislikes. The ratio was just every single time. And that's when they got rid of the likes on YouTube. Now, I can't say definitively, but I'm pretty suspicious of the fact that they wanted to try and stop people from seeing just how much of a difference of opinion there really was in official narratives. And I wonder if this might be the same case with X and trying to reduce the optics of disagreements on controversial issues and things like that.
Right. Well, the interesting thing about the ASHA experiment is that when it was repeated with one of the people that gave the correct answer, one of the actors, the rate of which the test subject would give also the correct answer just shot up massively, right? And so within the PSYOP literature, there's a thing called consensus cracking, where if the only way that a manufacturer consensus can form is if there's no dissidence.
Right.
Right. Which is the reason why they want to prevent the dislikes, is because those dislikes break the consensus.
Exactly.
And people are like, hey, we don't like this. Why is this person saying it? You know, why is
15,000 people think this way? Oh, maybe I should question this narrative a little bit.
Right.
It's dangerous.
Right. And so that's just why they got to get rid of that, because they don't want the consensus cracking by, you know, the commoner that disagrees with whatever it is that they're pushing out and shoveling to us.
Just as we wind down now, coming up to the end of the hour, you have spoken about your concerns about election integrity and voter fraud. So could you comment a little bit on your concerns relating to the 2020 election and how some of these technologies may have been leveraged?
Well, you know, There's different flavors of election interference, right? There's election fraud, which I do believe has been occurring in America for quite some time, maybe even since the founding of America. It's always been there at some level. I think they cranked it up a lot. But then there's also undue influence, right? Like Google is essentially operating as an unregistered illegal lobbying entity that's hurting specific candidates and sending their emails directly to spam. They've got this search engine manipulation effect where by ranking content and hiding it, you're going to take these undecided voters that don't really understand what's going on. They still kind of believe in the system, but they're like, oh, I believe in the right-wing establishment or the left-wing establishment. And then they go on the internet, and then they only are fed information in one political orientation. They're like, oh, well, I guess this is just the consensus, and they go along with it. Like, the problem that we have as people is that we are herd animals. And there's a lot of people with a circuit in their brain that basically tests the winds of how everyone else is voting, and then they fall in line with the tribe. I think it's a survival mechanism. Like, people that tend to go along with the groups of people tend to have better life outcomes than those that disagree. Because when you're an outsider and resources are scarce, you know, you're going to be the first to go. So there's a evolutionary argument saying that would encourage suspending critical thinking skills and logic, and to go along with whatever the people think and legitimately believe that you came to this on your own natural conclusions. So this is the thing that Google is essentially trying to hijack, right? Like, make it seem like this is what everyone thinks, you know. And the problem is that they pushed it too far, right? Like, what we discovered, you know, what I discovered and showed in the Project Veritas whistleblowing event was that Google would autocomplete a search result, and that they weren't things that people were searching for. And for example, and this is now relevant right now, you would go to Google and you could type in "women can," right? And there are things like "women can do anything" and da da da. But what was very disturbing was that Google was auto-completing "women can be drafted." This was June 2019, and I was like, wait, who the heck is searching for "women can be drafted," and why? No one wants women to be drafted. People don't even want men to be drafted, much less especially women. Like, they are the child-bearing populations. When a population has its females decimated, they implode. They can take a hit from the men dying, and the rest of the men will fill in the role. But when the women die, that's a population collapse. And so women have always been sort of excluded from war unless it's during very dire times. And so, you know, it was like, well, who's actually searching for "women can be drafted"? And now what you see is that you see legislation being talked about to force women to register for the Selective Service within the United States. And what it looks like now is that, you know, this was a predictive programming. Now, you may argue that Google was actually doing this themselves, but the way that I've seen that Google operates with their operations is that they don't really want to get their hands dirty. Instead, what they have is sort of like accidental exploits. And those exploits become known to third parties, maybe even intentionally. And what happens is that those third-party entities will then start exploiting the system. So for example, with Women Can Be Drafted, you have a botnet that starts searching for Women Can Be Drafted that's seeding the narrative and actually producing those long tail keywords that get auto-completed. And so Google legitimately thinks that women can be drafted, and that's an okay auto-completion. But as a human being, we're looking at that. We know that other humans aren't searching for this sort of stuff. And what I suspect is happening is that Google is allowing a whole bunch of exploits. They're being hacked. They don't fix the hacks because this is part of the agenda that they're implementing by the people that pull the strings behind the curtains. I put it out there for people to look at how the sausage is made, how the censorship works, so that, you know, by mass awakening of how this works, we can prepare ourselves for what's coming and try to stop. I mean, I used to think that we could stop it, but now with this AI steamrolling every single aspect of our lives, I'm starting to come to the conclusion this force is so big and so strong that we can slow it down, but we can't really stop it. The amount of energy that is now pushing this into our lives is so tremendous that it seems almost like a force of nature. And so, you know, at this point, instead of trying to restore our civil liberties, I'm just trying to prevent an AI-mediated genocide like what's happening in Ukraine right now, where young men are being picked up, thrown into vans, given a gun, and then sent to die on an AI battlefield with face-tracking explosive kamikaze drones. Like, that's the worst-case scenario. And if we don't figure out how to push back against that, then that future that has already happened in Ukraine is going to be the future that we're going to have right here at home.